Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNRadio.com/Behind the Badge.
So the news click at WGNRadio.com, our daily web poll question said, should the Senate vote on President Trump's Supreme Court nominee before the election? 84% of you in our non-scientific survey said no, they should wait until after the election. 16% said yes. I'll tell you, our text line is different than that. A lot of you are saying yes, yes, yes. And in principle, if nothing else, that is, Barack Obama was the president. They shouldn't screw him. But Donald Trump is still the president. And as the sitting president, he should put up a nominee. And as a sitting Senate, even some liberals are saying, maybe not liberal enough, but some liberals are saying, in principle, that's how it works. There's no time limit set on this. I don't think. I'm not a constitutional law expert, but Dave Schultz is. He's a law professor at the University of Minnesota and an author of a book about presidential swing states. Welcome back, Dave. Thanks for joining us today.
Thanks, John, for having me again. I appreciate it.
Does the Constitution dictate the timeline or the terms of how those nominees get put up and approved?
For the most part, all the Constitution says is the president nominates, and in the language of the Constitution, the Senate provides advice and consent. Everyday language confirms. After that, it's wide open. If a vacancy occurs, the president could say, I'll fill it. He could say, I'm not going to fill it. He could take 6 months to fill it. He could say, not going to do it. The Senate could say, we're going to hold a hearing today. We're going to hold no hearing. We're going to hold a hearing in 6 months. The Constitution is, you know, as it is, it's threadbare on this issue. And beyond that, it's really, I guess, whatever the political process dictates.
I'd say then that the Constitution is myopic about this. Did they not anticipate that there might be a timing issue and that maybe they should put a timeline on it?
Probably myopic, I think, would be a good description. But also, I'm going to say that the framers, when they drafted the Constitution, did not envision the Supreme Court to be anywhere near as powerful of an institution as it's become in our society, where almost in this case, where the presence or non-presence of one Supreme Court justice has repercussions across so many areas of our society. Yeah. So myopic might be a little bit. Some of it might have been simply that times have changed so dramatically. I should also point out, by the way, that nothing in the Constitution says there has to be nine justices. We've had over time, I think as few as, well, I think seven might have been the smallest number. I think at one time it was up to 10. So, again, the framers left an incredible amount up to the discretion of future generations to make the rules.
I want to ask you a little bit about that. Where there is a tie, if you have an even number, then the decision, if you will, goes back to the previous court's decision.
Correct.
Correct.
So let's say, in a real simple world, I don't know, a lower court says the sky is blue, and Supreme Court ties 4-4. Well, the lower court decision that says the sky is blue would be the decision. But it would technically only be binding in that jurisdiction, for example. So it wouldn't be necessarily binding across the whole country.
Okay, so if a state brought up an election issue or something like that, a tax issue, an education issue, it would apply in the event of a tie to the previous court's determination. But I'm thinking about when Al Gore challenged the presidential election results, that went directly to the Supreme Court. I wonder what would have happened if you'd had an even number then.
Well, again, it worked its way up through both state court and through a federal court. But
it did
eventually work. It was a decision at the Florida Supreme Court, and then it was merged with a federal court decision. So this would still have to work its way up to the Supreme Court. The what's called original jurisdiction, or cases which start with the Supreme Court, are so few and so infrequent. They usually only involve, like, let's say Illinois was suing Michigan over water rights or something like that. You know, states get to bring against other states, get to bring it right to the Supreme Court. But no, this could be important because we know that this election is already one of the most heavily litigated before the election of any in American history. And we can certainly think that over the next 43 days or whatever it is till the election, and after the election, we're going to see a lot more fights. I mean, just yesterday, a federal judge ruled that in Wisconsin, that ballots have to be postmarked by election day, and now they can be accepted and counted, was it, I think, 6 days or 7 days after the election. I am certain that case is going all the way up to the Supreme Court in the next couple of weeks.
Dave Schultz is a constitutional law professor at the University of Minnesota. But is there something that is implicit in the Constitution or maybe the precedent, the history of this country, about how this should go? I wonder if you could sort of read between the lines, and maybe we shouldn't, right? But just answer that for me in a minute. If you've got a question or comment, too, 312-981-7200. We're talking about the Supreme Court. And Mitch McConnell says, I'm reading now from a story that's just moved, says he will fast-track a Trump Supreme Court nominee. Does it say, to Dave Schultz, that they have to have hearings, or can they just simply take the president's guy and give him an up or a down, or her an up or a down? Dave Schultz, constitutional law professor at the University of Minnesota, joining us. I met him when I used to do radio up there, and his expertise works down here, too. By the way, he's written a terrific book about presidential swing states. What's the title of that book, Dave?
It's actually called Presidential Swing States.
What a coincidence!
Volume 2. Amazing. And we talk about how what? In this election, there's only 7 states that matter.
Previously, you said 10 in the first edition. Now you say 7?
That's only 7 at this point. It's even though people talking about how maybe this election there's more states in play, at the end of the day, it's 7 states are going to decide the election.
I'm guessing Arizona is one of them?
Correct, it is, as well as Michigan, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, North Carolina, Florida, and Minnesota. Those are the 7.
Wow, it's funny because not all of those are especially populous states. Yeah, they're middling. Minnesota is not super populated.
That's right.
But I guess the very populated states have already spoken for. Texas, New York, Illinois, California. We know how they're going to go. Yeah.
Exactly.
So let's just go back to the Supreme Court and how it works. It's fascinating to me that the Congress sets the number of justices. Could then, if the president puts through somebody in a manner that the Democrats think is unfair, could they then add more justices to sort of change the balance or weight of the Supreme Court if they control the Congress?
They could do that, yes. Back in 1937, Franklin Roosevelt, when he was president, was very frustrated with the Supreme Court about ruling against his decisions. He gave what was called the famous court packing plan, threatened to add more justices. Now, he never had to do that, but the justices got the point. You ever hear the phrase, a switch in time saves 9? Kind of an old, I think my grandparents used that phrase. And that was a phrase that came out of that radio address that what? The Supreme Court justices switching their opinions in time saved the 9. But here, there's nothing that would prevent, let us say, Joe Biden, if he were to get elected, if a Democratic Senate and Congress, from saying, we're going to go up to, you know, I don't know, 15 justices
or
something.
But if he does that, that would still require the Senate to approve of them, though, right?
Correct. But if that were to happen, actually, that could be filibustered. It could be. It would be difficult to do because of a filibuster rule at that point. But in theory, they could do that. But you were asking before a break, you know, what we're really talking about, questions here, what prevents certain things from happening. There's implicitly, I think, the notion of what? Fair play. And somewhere in the background, I think this is something that all of us learned about when we were little kids, you know, playing sports, playing kickball, whatever, about fair play. And if I'm going to think of one casualty of American politics right now, it's that concept of fair play. And I'm going to say a pox on both sides. Here, I'm not surprised that Mitch McConnell did what he did 4 years ago in saying, I've got the votes, I can prevent Merrick Garland, his appointee, from being put on the bench. And now I've got the votes again, and I can get through Donald Trump. It's not about principle. It's about what? It's about power and how power dominates as opposed to the concept of fair play.
But Donald Trump's the sitting president, so it's certainly within the keeping of his responsibility to appoint a nominee, right?
Yeah, there's no question about it. I mean, I actually have no beef with Donald Trump on this one. He has a right, you know, to nominate. The real beef I think that many people have is whether or not Mitch McConnell was being inconsistent in what he did 4 years ago versus today. Yeah, and that really is the issue here. You know, but on one level, to read it as saying that if there's a vacancy on the court and the court has many important things to do, its new term starts Monday in October, maybe we need to have a full slate.
Well, so more than one person has told me the sin is not what's happening now. Merrick Garland is the sin. It's what Mitch McConnell did last time. And I must say what's striking to me right now is the fact that the senators on the Republican side have said they will approve of the nominee, not even knowing who it is. I mean,
you're right. I mean,
that's not advice and consent. That's a rubber stamp.
It is. And usually when we go through these confirmation hearings, it takes several months because after the nominee is named, you do the background checks, you do the security checks. I mean, usually these take several months to do. And normally if I were to tell you that, gosh, we have a vacancy and we want to fill this within 45 days or let alone within 4 months, that would be really tall order to do something like that.
Well, it won't be a tall order because whoever the president puts up, they're just going to say, good, we got ours. It's also
to be
reflective of how confident they are that Donald Trump's going to get reelected. It would seem to me like if they were certain that he was going to get reelected, then there wouldn't be this rush. They could wait as long as they wanted if the team was going to be the same. Same Republican-controlled Senate, same Republican in the White House. They could wait until after the November election. The rush, to me, speaks a little to their confidence about what's going to happen in November.
I think you're right. And the other thing that bothers me about this, too, is that whatever the motives are of Trump and Mitch McConnell, I worry about the potential damage to the Supreme Court in terms of the perception that this is just politicizing the Supreme Court even more. And if I'm Chief Justice Roberts, you know, who's trying to sort of steer, let's say, a middle course at this point, this cannot be something looking very good to him in terms of, gosh, how do I manage this perception now?
I wondered how some of the other justices felt about somebody being ramrodded through. Tom, you're on WGN Radio with Dave Schultz. Hold on a second, Elif. I'm going to make sure that our guest is locked in. You'll do that for me, right? Good. And Tom, you're on WGN. What's your question or comment? Hi.
Hi. I think Dave pretty much just answered my question. But again, you started off by saying it's the president's constitutional right and the Senate's constitutional duty to have the hearing. So I'm not understanding the concept of why Barack Obama named it in the Senate. They should at least held a hearing, whether they were going to appoint them or not, is their constitutional duty. Why were they allowed to do that?
Yeah, no, I think that's exactly correct. That's why I think when John said that was the sin, and I think that was the problem 4 years ago, is that 8 months, I think it was 8 months out when Scalia died, and Mitch McConnell said, we're just going to sit on this. And it did lead to a 4-4 court, and there were many, many important decisions that were left 4-4 that really we needed a fifth justice to resolve. And so I think that's the problem what happened then. But given the reasoning that Mitch McConnell gave then, now apply that to the present, there is that appearance of hypocrisy that's out there. But I do agree that all things being equal, if what happened 4 years ago didn't occur, right now, if the president nominated and the Senate said, we're going to move on this as rapidly as possible, understanding the fact that that we still have to do a full vetting process and no confirmation, that would be okay. That would be okay.
I haven't talked to you about this for the last time. Let's visit again on the swing states. Presidential Swing States is Dave Schultz's book. And also, let's continue to follow what happens over the next week or so, Dave. I'm going to call you back, if not later this week, next week, okay?
Excellent. Thank you very much.
Dave Schultz is a constitutional law professor from the University of Minnesota.